Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better public land hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together. All right, so I'm sitting here and I am talking to Ben Huffman of One Cast Fishing. So Ben, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. Thanks for the introduction there. Again, Ben Huffman, I am the owner, founder, however you want to say it, of One Cast Fishing, making primarily fishing lures that started as a side business 3 years ago, but I've been doing it full time now, just over a year.
So how did all that come about? What drove your passion for making your own fishing tackle?
Yeah, it was it wasn't a real plan. It was by accident. I love fishing, bass fishing. I really got into it, jumped, straight in the lake, so to speak, after I joined the Army with fishing. And I wanted a hobby that's something I could do to be connected with fishing when I couldn't be in the water. So whether that was the weather was bad, coming home from, putting long hours at work, but coming home, can't get on the water. So I wanted something to, keep me connected to that passion, that hobby of mine. So I started making jigs. From there, I started catching fish on them, friends, family. And so back in the summer of 18, I think August of 18 is when I opened up a store online and started, marketing through Instagram and building the brand that way. So that was a side business 3 years. And then finally decided to get out of the Army last year to chase the dream, chase the passion, and see how far this thing can go.
That's pretty cool, man. So I've always wanted, I don't know, maybe one day it'll happen, not sure, but quit my day job just to pursue something else that, I want to go after, a passion project. So it's always awesome to hear from and talk to people that have done something like that. So kind of curious though, did you always fish? Was it something you started later in life? How did all that come about?
So I have always enjoyed fishing since I was a kid. I didn't get the opportunity to go a whole lot. My dad was in the Marine Corps, so he was gone a lot at times. But I remember trips, after church, going over to the lake and pond, and my sister would want to go sometimes, and she would look out the window and look awful sad. But my dad and I would go. She was a little too young to go. I was only like 5 or 6, and I always seemed to outfish them. Now, he's a much better hunter than I am, but I always seem to outfish him. Like I said, we didn't get to go a whole lot, but I spent a few summers back in Missouri with my grandparents and fished a lot more then. And then finally in the Army, I decided I wanted to fish more. So I went to Bass Pro, bought my first boat, and just been fishing ever since.
So I got to ask you, why bass fishing? And is that like your top priority all the time, or what's your favorite fish to go after?
So it is bass fishing. I think ultimately it kind of comes down to really the industry and the competition surrounding it. Growing up when we were fishing, it didn't really matter what we were fishing for, as long as we were catching. We did a lot of catfishing. So it's, I guess, for whatever reason, I guess it was that tournament driven, seeing the old magazines and all, that drove me to bass fishing. And of course, it's a big, culture community now.
Yeah.
In the outdoor industry.
Watching Bill Dance as a kid and Jimmy Houston and Roland Martin, all those guys,
yeah,
for sure.
All the legends. Yep.
And I still like watching Roland Martin on YouTube now. He's got a bunch of stuff, a bunch of content that I recently rediscovered, which was pretty cool. And just watching him do it like on a budget, a lot of the stuff he does is kind of just the low budget stuff, which is pretty neat. So bass fishing, you started doing it, started making your own lures. How did it start out? Were you making like jigs? Were you making, casting your own worms or plastics? What were you, how did it all begin?
It started by, it's all casting, jigs is where it started. I love jig fishing, caught a lot of big fish on jigs over the years. And as a hobby, it's a little cheaper to get into than plastics. Yeah. So that's why I went with that. I guess that's the reason why I went with it initially. Now looking back on it, that was a good decision trying to grow a business when you look at that from an industry perspective. Now, to go that route. But yeah, I started hand pouring it all, and that's we hand poured for the first, I guess, 3 years, you know, count all the side business time.
Are you pouring like lead, aluminum, tin? What are you pouring mostly?
Yeah, pouring lead. Lead is great for fishing application because it's so heavy, it's so dense. Some states have outlawed some use of lead, so they have to use either lighter or less dense metal. So I think tin is an option a lot of investment, but that's just so much more expensive. Or tungsten, which is a whole another process involved trying to manufacture those.
Yeah, you almost need a crucible to melt the tungsten to get what you need, right?
Yeah. So they don't even melt it. From what I understand, how it's made is they take tungsten powder, because tungsten, I think it melts like it's several thousand degrees. Like it would melt most other metals if it was that hard. So they take tungsten powder and put 3% of some other metal in there, tin or whatever they want, and basically melt that other metal and compress it in a mold. So it kind of fuses that tungsten powder together. So that's why you see 97% tungsten or 98% tungsten, because that's how it's made. But that involves a lot of expensive big presses and environmental regulations that other countries who make them don't have to worry about.
So let's go into that a little bit, because I find it interesting. I've seen some of your stuff. I believe I've seen some of your TikToks, and one of the things you always say is talk about, you know, American made versus stuff made in other countries. Where's your stuff come from, you know? So can you kind of talk about that a little bit, and kind of, you know, the motivation, one, behind that, and two, you know, how it's sourced and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the motivation of just having American made is, I think, bass fishing is really an American industry. Of course, it's spread now throughout the globe. You know, there are big bass fishing communities in Japan, Korea, South Africa, places, but it's really an American industry. So having a product for anglers made in America was important. Now when it comes to the business side, the overwhelming majority of our tackle is not, and even in for the guys of us who are, a lot of our components are made overseas. There's just skirts, for instance, the skirts on our jigs, right? There's only two countries in the world that really make those. I take that back. I will say I think Z-Man does make their own here in the States for their own products, which is awesome. But for a lot of us, they get, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the products are overseas, but at least we bring it here and we manufacture here.
Yeah.
So it's poured and cast here and developed here. So doing as much as we can.
No, that's cool. So one of the other things that I thought was really neat that you always do, and I don't know if it was like originated, you did it on TikTok or if it was on Instagram, but Best Bass Fishing Lake, all 50 states.
Yeah, that originated on TikTok initially, and that was probably back late summer of 2020, so a year and a half ago. I was like, so, you know, I had seen, you know, some other videos, people doing top tens of other things, or the best beach or something, or mountain or state park in this state. So it's like, how can I apply this to bass fishing? So I started that series. I think the first one was either Texas or Florida, then went down. It's interesting. After I did that consistently for probably a month or two, and then a lot of other creators picked it up, you know, started doing their own, which is great, to see other people's thoughts. And then I took a long break and then picked it back up and then finished it out over the last, I finished it out late last year. And so it was probably like 9 months after that break that I finished it out. So it was definitely a fun series.
So out of all those states, how many of them have you fished those lakes? Just kind of curious.
Very few. Very few. unfortunately. So the way I kind of I chose the lakes, and I loved it because the conversation involved, everyone has their own opinion. A lot of it comes down to personal preference. So a lot of the states that I have fished, bodies of waters, like North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Missouri, I kind of had an idea in my head, which is my favorite. For the other states, it was research on with fish populations, looking at tournament weights, how the pros did their bucket list lakes type of thing. So I threw all those in there, and it's ultimately my list. So I kind of chose the best one was the one that I would want to fish if I was going to that state. So that's kind of how the list was developed.
So out of all those states and lakes, if you could pick a couple of them, what would they be to fish if you haven't fished them yet?
Oh man, so many. probably definitely one of the Tennessee River lakes, probably Gunnersville. It used to be Kentucky Lake years ago, but they've had the fishes get a rebound a little bit better after a few years. They've had a few bad years. So probably Gunnersville. You go out to the Toho lakes just in Florida. That's the one chain I haven't really fished. And then probably Sam Rayburn, Lake Fork, or I guess OHIV actually probably the one I would choose now. After I did that video from Texas, which I think was the very first or second one, OHIV's had so many 12 and 14 pound bass caught over the last 18 months that I'd probably have to add that one on the list because there's a huge possibility of landing a fish of a lifetime there.
So my dad's got a place out in Lake Fork, and I guess right now the water level, they had to do something. I don't know if they had to drain the lake or it's low because of some dam or something, but I guess the water level is like 3 foot. He showed me a picture of his dock and it's super, super low. So he says it's actually good because it concentrates the fish, so it's easier to get on them. But at the same time, I mean, over long term, that's not good for the fish. But so you could definitely kind of concentrate on them and get on them easier right now.
The Major League Fishing had their tournament up there last weekend or at Lake Fork. And it was concentrating, but with all that standing timber out there, like this, they can be anywhere out there. So
yeah,
they had some good days out there, and I think it got colder and colder, so it got tougher, you know, as it went along. But there's also some big fish caught that lake definitely produces.
Yeah, for sure. You know what's crazy is I've never even fished it. I've never even fished Lake Fork.
It is. You got to fish it if you just. There's a lot of double digit bass come out of that lake.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of them too. So, I mean, I know they're out there. I just never made time. So I'm kind of curious though, like a lot of times you do like reviews of products and stuff like that. Is that from personal interest or just kind of trying to want to show people, you know, what you can get? Or I've even seen some stuff that is like knockoff, you know, that you had to buy it through a site in Japan or something like that, and you get it where it doesn't have the same label on. How did all that even come about or start?
Yeah, the reviews, a lot of that stemmed, I guess, the very first thing I did for One Cast Fishing, I started a YouTube channel like 2017. So I made a few videos here and there. That's where I came up with the name of One Cast Fishing. And you know, the video wise couldn't be consistent, you know, with the Army and all, but that's what I originally started. And so in some of those, I would do reviews of reels, rods, et cetera. And I like doing that because I just like providing, you know, my input on it. Maybe someone thinks like I think, and they can help them make a decision or regarding a product. So as for your, so when you're talking about buying through another site in Japan, so products like Shimano, Daiwa, Megabass, they're all Japanese companies. A lot of their reels, you can, they make the same model practically and sold in two different countries, and you can buy it from Japan and have it shipped here for a lot cheaper. Depending on the model, sometimes a few $100. The real difference is that your box comes, it's in Japanese and not English, for the most part. There's some slight differences, like the spool might be slightly smaller, holds like 10 less yards of line. And I believe you don't have the warranty here if you do that. Otherwise, it's a lot cheaper way to sometimes buy almost the same product.
So I'm kind of curious, though, how did you figure that out? Is it something like you discovered on forums and people started talking about it? I'm kind of curious because I never would have thought to order something from a Japanese website, you know, and ordering it.
Yeah, so I that was probably when I was really starting to research Shimano's and looking at the differences a few years back. I was reading on probably a Shimano forum, maybe a Facebook page or something, and I saw that. The same thing applies for tungsten. You can buy tungsten a lot cheaper straight from the source. Because again, it's all made overseas, or the overwhelming majority of it is made overseas. I found out by just Googling online in Alibaba. I mean, you can buy it from Alibaba and there's a lot of, actually probably, I think some eBay stores are, that's what they're doing. So that was just searching on the internet, trying to find a cheaper price on tungsten.
No, that's pretty cool though. I would have never thought of that. And I would end up, paying the full price on something if I really wanted it, I guess.
I do a lot still anyways, because I only need one or two and I don't want to buy that many in bulk. Or, oh, I'm in the aisle of fishing, I was like, oh, I need an extra one of these. So
yeah,
I usually end up doing that.
So what's your favorite when you're actually, you know, fishing? Is it dependent upon, like, you know, season or cycle of the fish, as far as, you know, spawn, post spawn, all that kind of stuff, that you're using different rigs? And, you know, do you want, obviously, you know, like later in the summer or something like that, when you got a bunch of frogs and mice and stuff like that running across cover and stuff, you know, you're going to use like a buzz bait or something like that. But do you have a preference, like a Ned rig or you know, some type of rig like that, or is it mostly like top to shallow water stuff?
Well, if I could choose any one way to catch them, be on a jig, probably a football jig, drag it around offshore. But even the spring, you know, I could have a, you know, a jig to flip around. It's just so versatile. So I always have one. So I guess I should say, you know, all year long, I probably have some type of jig tied on, a crankbait, and probably a Ned rig. So I've some all tied here. So those would probably be my top three preferences if I've always got them tied on.
So when I first discovered the Ned rig, I used it a lot, and fish would just hammer it a couple years ago. And now it seems like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but maybe it's, do you ever think that the Ned rig is overplayed a little bit, and like the fish, after they get caught a couple times on it, get wise to it, or no?
Oh yeah, the fish definitely get wise to whatever we're throwing out there. So that's true. The Ned rig, when it really became popular about probably 4 or 5 years ago, you know, exploded. Same thing happened before that with Whopper Plopper or Alabama rig. They're still quite useful in situations, all those, but the fish do get, you know, adjusted to it. So yeah. I guess it depends. They do get smarter with it.
So with that being said, is there anything else that's kind of new out there? You know, somebody's put a new spin on something that seems to be the new hot type of lure.
I don't think there's any really new hot lure out there. Really, the big advance right now has been in sonar and forward facing sonar, and really the adaptation of the angler with that technology. That's been the biggest change. That's just going to continue to improve fishing, but also probably eventually make fishing even tougher.
So I know nothing about that. So I understand like side sonar and like that kind of stuff, but so how the fish, you're saying fish facing or forward facing? So like say you're standing forward on the bow of your boat.
Yes. So four or five years ago, Garmin came out with they've had Panoptics, but LiveScope is what they call it. And it shoots a sonar beam out in front of the bow of the boat. And it's not very wide. It's only like 20 degrees wide. So it's a very narrow section. And it's live. So you cast your bait out there and you reel it back. If it's in that cone, you can see it come back to you. You can see the fish there and you can see the fish move in real time. And then you can move that transducer when you move your trolling motor head. And so you can scan around and you can watch and you can pinpoint fish and pinpoint, you know, specific pieces of structure you want to try to hit. So Garmin had that for the first few years. And now each of the major manufacturers, Humminbird, Lowrance, they all have their own version of the technology. And so it's becoming widely adopted and the uses continue to get, it's more and more surprising the uses you can get out of it that's being demonstrated, especially on the pro circuits.
That's pretty interesting. I never even knew something like that actually existed. Maybe I don't pay enough attention to the, you know, newer stuff. Then again, I don't really use a lot of that stuff. A lot of the lakes I fish, smaller type strip mines, stuff like that. Good bass lakes sometimes. I mean, for, you know, close to home or whatever. But honestly, my favorite thing to do is fish on the river for smallmouths. That is because they just hit and they fight and you can watch them flop yeah. out of the water. I mean, it's not as fun as like, because something is really cool about watching a largemouth smack something and then jump up and just kind of grab it right out of the water, especially like when you get some cover on the water, like lily pads or something like that. And it's almost like a shark attack, you know, like,
yes, very, very violent,
super violent, super cool. That's exciting. So I got to say that's probably more exciting than the river, but as far as the volume or number of fish caught, you know, in a single day, if you're drifting down river or sometimes a buddy of mine and we go with a guide, that's a local guy in the area, just have a blast because now we don't even have to worry about driving the boat. He's taking care of all that for us, and we're just sitting there throwing constantly. You know, it's all fishing all day for us with no real work involved. So that's pretty cool to do that for sure. Like, what's your favorite type of fish and stuff to do like that?
I mean, I love going to different lakes because I've bass fishing, fish primarily lakes, but I like going to different bodies of water just to see the variation and habitat, and then trying to figure out that puzzle because bass and probably all species of fish, they've got seasonal patterns, they've got in certain temperaments, certain things that most of them do. But there's always something unique about the particular body of water they live in, because it's its own ecosystem that's in a lot of ways may not ever be connected to the lake that's 5 miles next door. So it's always a puzzle you got to try to figure out on a new body of water.
Yeah. So speaking of that, then, like, what are some of the things you are looking for as far as you know, the different features that try and hone in on the bass?
Yes, you know, if I go to a new lake, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to catch them. Yeah, first I'm going to look at, you know, the season we're in, their seasonal pattern they should be in. It's going to be based upon the time of the year and how warm that, you know, water temperature is. And from there, that kind of narrows me in kind of what phase the bass should be in, pre-spawn, post-spawn, spawn, fall transition, you know, et cetera. And then just, you got to get out, then you got to get out in the body of water, look at the water clarity, and based upon that, and then your contour lines on your map, try to figure out if you want to find an offshore or kind of bank bite. And then you just got to go graph around and try to find them, or you get a fish and try to figure it out and eliminate water.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. So seasonally, as you're kind of chasing the bass, what are some of the things that you kind of got to keep in mind when trying to target them different times of the year?
So in the wintertime, that they're usually, you know, out in deeper water or off the banks, kind of grouped up together a lot of times. When the daylight gets long enough slash the water gets warm enough, those fish are going to move to the bank. And that's, to be honest, this movement phase can sometimes be difficult, and it's sometimes difficult for me to figure out. So they left their winter locations. Where are they at on their migration? What type of points or structures, and how far back, and how much did they move? And so it's a little frustrating trying to find them again. But once you find them, of course, you can get bit all the time. So it's just trying to follow their movement to the bank. Some bodies of water that they can go from out deep to on the bank seems like almost overnight, and other bodies it may take, you know, a few weeks for that.
Yeah. So when you're on the bank, I mean, are you looking, I guess it depends on the time of the day, right? For, you know, the different refraction of the light coming in and what type of cover to try and find them under.
Yeah. I mean, time of day can play a huge role. You know, under low light conditions, those bass are more apt to roam around outside that cover chasing bait, or more apt to go out and chase, you know, when your moving bait comes by. If the sun comes up under, you know, they can hide, you know, tight to that cover, be snugged up against it. If it's windy, you know, and sunny, they could be moving more. Specifically, if it's windy, you know, and cloudy, you know, they can be moving it. So, I mean, there's so many factors involved, but that's kind of the general, two general, you know, ways to look at it.
So I got to ask you something. You mentioned earlier that your dad's a better hunter than you. So,
yes.
Do you hunt often, and what do you kind of pursue?
Now, I try to go every deer season, go back to my parents' farm in Missouri and go. I haven't, you know, same thing growing up, you know, we didn't always get the opportunity to hunt based upon what my dad was doing at the time. But it just seems like every time he goes out, it's like first morning, it just, deer comes, walks right in front of him, and it goes down. Me, it's always been a much more of a struggle to harvest my deer, but that's kind of where that comes from. But when it comes to fishing, he can't, you know, if he listens to this, he can't really cast a bait caster, so it makes it kind of difficult.
You know, I am not the best bait caster in the world either. And I think in the past it was mostly because I had cheaper bait casters, and I just could never figure them out. And I'm sure nowadays they've got stuff that's so easy to cast, you don't even have to probably put your finger on the spool or, you know, let it glide over it anymore like mm-hmm. you used to, because I could never figure out that pressure, and I'd end up with a bird's nest almost every time and couldn't set the backlash just right to where it wouldn't do that. Is there anything out there that is pretty much dummy proof these days to where you could probably cast one and not have to worry about it?
No, there's not even dummy proof one. I mean, I've even got, you know, the Shimano, like Metanium DC, and I still backlash it, you know? So, and that digital spool is supposed to help prevent that. So, No, they can all backlash. If you know you don't have them set right, that's just takes practice trying to get used to it. I mean, spinning reels, they catch fish too. But most of our, bass anglers eventually go over just to some of the advantages of bait casters eventually once you get practice using them.
So what's the advantages of a bait caster versus a spin caster then?
Yeah, so a lot of it comes down to ergonomics, so that reel is right on that rod, so you can put your palm over it, you can hold it. Helps, that weight on there helps balance a little bit better with the rod. And of course, in that line, from the spool to the first guide, there's less of a distance between that and the rod, so it just helps it be more accurate. So, bait casters are usually more accurate. You can be more efficient with them. You can fish faster with them, make more casts in the same amount of time. So those are a lot of the advantages of using a bait caster.
So, okay, I got to ask you this then, because if I choose to go down the road of bait caster, what the heck should I get then that would
I get that question a lot. It all comes down to budget, what you want to spend, because you can go absolutely crazy on these things, or you can go like a $20, Walmart special. I mean, the range is huge. I would say pretty much all the major brands, the Luz, the Shimano's, the AdBoozy, around that $100 price point, they're all very good, and they're very, very similar in quality. So I think it's the Revo for AdBoo. I think it's the SOX for Shimano, that the Luz speed spool. So they're all good, good options, and I mean, I still use a couple of them today, so they're definitely. They can last a long time.
So if you wanted to go into like the mid-grade type of bait caster, what would your the top number one or big best choice be?
So I guess I would call, what would mid grade be? Price, or like
I don't know,
150
like
to 300, maybe
400 or something, 300.
up to 300 or 400. For that, I guess a couple I would go with. I mean, that Shimano Titanium I have, that's one of the ones I bought straight from Japan. That was 300. So that's probably the best one to go for at that price. Because that same reel in the States is typically like 420. And again, the real difference is it holds 10 yards more line. So,
No real difference.
no, but that reel, it's my favorite reel for sure. But below that, the Corrados are good from Shimano. The BB1 Pros are pretty good from Luz. So I mean, those are all pretty good options I would probably gravitate towards.
Yeah, no, that's all good information because maybe I'll have to switch over and try and practice and actually use a bait caster. I mean, I've got like one or two. I don't even know what the heck they are, and I rarely use them. They're not in, let's just say they're not in my truck at all times, like some of the other rods are, for sure.
No, I get it. Yeah.
So I got to ask you though, what is there any big plans for one cast or anything like that coming up in the future? Any new stuff you're going to be releasing or anything like that?
Yes. So we're going to be releasing, or we hope to be releasing, if all goes as planned, and we can keep the path going, is new jigs at ICAST. So we're going down to ICAST. We'll have a booth down there, and we're launching some new jigs that are unique. There's nothing quite like them on the market. So that's a teaser I could say right now. I've been out the last few days casting a bunch of these up. So, and we've been fishing around here quite a bit with them. So they're working. Excited to release them. So it should be everyone should, I think, should enjoy it.
Okay, so you're going to release some new jigs at one cast. Is there anything like right now that's going to be released, or is that like the big teaser? And then when is that? ICAST is in June.
ICAST is in July.
Okay.
So that's the only so that's the big push right now. Because we want to have a bunch of these made up when we release them, so we have plenty in stock to hopefully, right? The big goal is that it's a big hit and everyone's going to be using one cast jigs in the future.
Cool.
So that's the big push. And then I get some plans hopefully the following year to a couple other products come out as well, based upon this line. So that's where all our efforts are right now.
No, that's cool. That's definitely cool to, see that you got kind of a long-term vision there for that. So I got to ask you, if somebody wants to buy your jigs and stuff like that, where would they go to find all that kind of stuff?
Yes, yeah, so this is the easiest is just to Google one cast fishing or onecastfishing.com. That takes you to the website. All our products are there. If you're also on Instagram, if you go to One Cast Fishing, you can go to our shop on Instagram. Same on Facebook as well. Shop through there, and I think on TikTok, it's on. There's a shop on TikTok too that had, under our page. So kind of versatile from whatever platform you want to use.
Can you like is it Google? Can you Google it and find it, or
Yeah, if you Google One Cast Fishing, it'll be the first one, or should be the first one that pops up.
okay. And so if they just want to find you and some of your cool content and all the fun stuff you've done, where would they find you? Same.
TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, it's all the same. Just one cast fishing. I think all the tags are the same across the board.
No, that's pretty cool. Thanks for coming on and sharing, Ben. It's been fun. And thanks for the advice. I'm gonna look into that a little bit more and kind of excited to see those new jigs come out.
Well, I appreciate it. I definitely enjoyed the conversation.
And once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.